Blog Talk Radio.
Trap your body, lock your mind. See you rising, wanna stop your crime. Sell the drugs they sold to us and call it drug bust. Grab they money, double product, then they lock you up, it's fucked up. They stand they ground, you better bow on yours and tough luck. We start rebelling cause they failed us, man, enough's enough. We bring a pistol, they got kids. We got rocks, they got grenades. Waving tanks all in your face. Ah. Look at what you made. You're trying to send the mud, then get mad when we decayed and enraged. We played this old game since we was raised. And still we load the cartridge, blow that dust up in their face. Ha!
Yeah, this shit is bad, dog. Under five black skin and got a black ball. Yeah, this shit is fucked up. No more cry, time to ride if they act up.
Guns up with that vest on and they pumped up and they ready to go if you jump, dump in that lid. Fuck what you did, bruh. Your wife is thinking your kids crying. Heard what they said? Toss your shit off on that float with that pistol up on your head. Them fuck boys running straight to your stash. Like in that closet, under that bed. Grabbing your kids and copping your bread. Ain't re-up, niggas ain't find shit. Lord, somebody sell them. These niggas know too much. Point out some sucker niggas ducking. Probably know too much. Now why she caught a kiss? Your baby fucking scarred. Trash in your house, these niggas claim it as they fucking job. Nah, asking questions, keep your calm. Cause these sucker ass niggas hating hard. Pay us what you owe us, nigga. Or pay us cause you owe us, nigga. These sucker niggas ain't no friend of me. I understand all of the state of all my enemies.
Yeah, this shit is bad, dog.
Yeah, this shit
under
is bad,
black skin and got a black ball.
Peace, peace, peace. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of YBE Radio. This is your girl, Shalice. So I see that the phone lines are lighting up already. So excited. We have a great guest tonight. We have Keith Cooper, the founder of Fix Baltimore, who is also an artist. We're going to be chopping it up with him in a few. But right now I'm going to bring on my co-host. JD, are you there?
Yes, hello, hello. Good evening. How are you, Shalice?
Hey, T, what's going on, honey?
Just another hard day at work. We're ready for this call. It's running a little late, so I do apologize.
No problem. You know I'm going to always hold it down. Is Keith on the line with you?
I don't see him, so we can go ahead. He may be running a little late.
Okay, gotcha. So we're going to jump right in, start with some hot topics. I'm just going to throw some things out there, like the shit that's going on in Oregon. Okay? So if you haven't heard, there is a group of armed, angry white men who have taken over a wild forest reserve in Oregon. They say that this is a stand for their constitutional rights, that they refuse to leave, and they will. And if anyone tries to move them, then they are going out in a hail of gunfire, which, you know, translates to angry white supremacist bullshit. Now, we all know that we all know that if they were black, the feds would have already went up in there and bust that shit open. But for some reason, it seems like I've been watching MSNBC and CNN. for hours when I get home, and I never really see anything spoken about it, just a blip on the radar. Have you heard anything about that, JB?
I mean, really, it's funny because my girl and I were talking about it when it first started happening, and we found out about it on Twitter. We turned on MSNBC, we turned on CNN, we turned on Fox News. We kind of found everything. And she was like, look at what's trending on Twitter, like, what's going on? And we literally had to research the issue. Because when it first started, like, nobody was reporting that shit. And I found that it was very interesting that nobody was reporting it. And then once they started reporting it, they were, you know, nationalists and militiamen and all this bullshit, which I don't personally understand, because if it was us, which it has been us, the Black Panthers have tried it, there's other people that have tried it, and it's definitely not going down. And they're just in there chilling. And the police are like, now I think the latest news is they put out warrant of arrest for the two people that are running it, but it's like, what's the point of the warrant for the arrest when they're in the building and you outside of it?
Yeah, they've already said that if the feds try and come in there, then they're going to be doing something like putting the women and children up front so that if the police fire on them, they're going to be firing on children. I mean, I just think that it's outrageous. You know, 12-year-old children are being killed for having toy guns, but you have a lot of angry white men who have a lot of guns. And now they're observing. They're playing. Now this is the time when they want to monitor some shit and scope out the situation. So we already know what that is. Undercover white supremacy. And I did hear today that I just heard that they indicted the police officer who, the white supremacist race soldier who arrested Sandra Bland. But they didn't arrest him for assault or anything like that. They arrested him for perjury.
Of course. We'll see how that plays out in the news. I would like to think, in my positive mind, that maybe it's a play for we'll take anything we can get, but then my conscious mind comes to wake, and I'm like, that's bullshit as well. So we'll see how that plays out in the news or in the court.
Yeah, I did see one person. I saw one person who commented on Facebook and said, you know, I hope that her family doesn't feel like they're getting some kind of justice from this trumped-up charge because, I mean, it means absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. So,
yeah.
You know, we could tell you to speak her name. We could tell you to speak the name of Tamar Rice. We could tell you to speak the name of Mike Brown, Eric Garner. You know, the hundreds of black men who have been killed by the police during this year alone. You know, we speak not only black men, but black women as well. We speak your names. And, you know, we do this in remembrance of you. That's why we have this show, you know, to bring those issues to the table, to spread the knowledge so that our people are aware of what's going on. You know, I actually had an elder who told me yesterday, someone that I very much so respect, that she didn't feel like people needed to wake up. That if people woke up, it would be a riot. It would be chaos. That we need to have, you know, set leaders to guide us. And I told her that respectfully, I completely disagree with that. We need everybody to be woke. We need all hands on deck. We need a little chaos.
Yeah, that's the same shit they were doing in the slave days. That's the same mentality. It's one side and the other side, but it's going to come together. We have to come together, and I want to shout out Ron and the What's Up African, like, unify or die. Like, really, that is what needs to happen. Like, we need to unify or our men, women, children will continue to be murdered by police, white supremacists, shit, by us. Like, we need to unify as a whole to stop the injustices against us by everybody, us included.
Exactly. And speaking of come together, you already know that on Friday we are going to be out and about with our girl, Kiara Butler. We're going to be at Red Emma's. Yes. YBE Radio is the spotlight organization for this month. Come Together. If you're not familiar, Come Together is a social activism mixer, a networking event. So all of us like-minded people with great energy and people who are trying to do something in the community, we come together, we exchange thoughts, we exchange information, and we link up later. So make sure you come through this Friday, Red Emma's, which is 30 West North Avenue. going to be from 6:30 p.m. to 9. But I'm not going to hold it up anymore. I'm going to bring our guest on. As I said, our special guest for this evening is going to be KC from Fix Baltimore. I had the pleasure of meeting him when I came out to the first to my first Fix Baltimore cleanup, which was actually the last one before the most recent one that they had this this weekend, because it was starting to get cold, so they had kind of put a took a chill pill. But I had the pleasure of meeting him, and immediately I noticed that he had this great energy. You know, we were all vibing, and we were working, but we were really vibing. And he just came in and said, no, you know, today what we're going to do, we're going to go around and we're going to actually, you know, talk to the people in the neighborhood, see what they need to need us to do besides just clean up. And that really struck me, because the area where we were cleaning up, you know, West Baltimore, that's my hood. Not just Emerson Village, but, you know, all over West Baltimore. So the area that we were in, it was so familiar to me, but he gave me that experience of being able to walk around and talk to the people and ask them how could we help them. And not only that, but we built, we decided to build on that energy, and he actually assisted me with Operation Give Back. When we were giving out our food, when Michelle Tierra and I were giving out our food, he actually just pulled up with a whole car full of clothes that we can give away to the homeless. I actually still have some of those clothes in my trunk right now. He's just an amazing individual, and we're going to be talking to him tonight about not only Fix Baltimore, but he also happens to be an amazing artist. If you are my Facebook friend, then you saw the chain. I actually call it my talisman because I wear it every day now, that he made for me. It's an onk. So he makes these amazing pieces from metal, and I'll give him a chance to expound on that today, too. So without further ado.
Peace, Queen. Peace, how
you doing?
Peace. How you doing? I'm JB. How y'all doing?
We're great. Happy to have you. Just kind of to piggyback off what Shalee said, I'm excited to speak with you. Your energy, even through social media, is amazing. Like, your smile exudes, like, positivity. So I'm excited to talk to you.
Doesn't it?
Yes, thank you. Thank you all. I appreciate it. But please believe that it is definitely due to what I'm attracted to, energy, like positive energy, positive people who are doing positive things attract to one another. And I feel like that's what's really going on. So I'm not the one that's supposed to take all the credit for this. You all are both phenomenal people yourself in what you all do in the day-to-day in your life. This is a direct reflection of it.
And I thank you.
Yeah.
So, let's jump right in. So tell us about you.
Okay, actually, I go by KC, and I'm from, I'm actually from the east side of Baltimore, Union Memorial Hospital, where I was born at. So I've been, but I wound up leaving with my dad, who was fully in custody of me when I was from 6 to the age of 13. And he was in the military, so we traveled from here to Rhode Island, to Virginia, New Orleans, Atlanta. Then I went to Florida. So I traveled a lot before I actually made it back to Baltimore. But I would always keep coming back until after my first year in college, I came back here. And that's when I started welding. So it was just a phenomenal comeback. And from it, which I would met so many phenomenal people, and I grew as a person. And I seen a problem, and I just figured, well, I didn't figure, I knew I had an answer. It might not have been the perfect answer, but it was an answer to at least one of the problems that we all have to face in day-to-day life. And so I just always seen myself as somebody who could do better than do better. And so that's all I'm trying to do, is actually just be a better me for, you know, just my day-to-day life, and actually expressing myself and being comfortable being myself, and it's by doing the best that I possibly can do with each day. So that's pretty much me.
That's dope.
That's right.
So what inspired you to talk to us about what gave you the idea to form Six Baltimore? Actually, you know what? Let me back up. For people who have no idea what Six Baltimore is, go into that.
All right. So basically, Six Baltimore is an urban community empowerment group, which that's in short to say that we pretty much specialize in community development and through like group activities that yield immediate results in the urban community. So we teach people by leading by example. We're not telling you by just giving you information. We're showing you exactly how to do it and breaking it out step by step. This is what they were supposed to show you in school, that we use our tax dollars for, but they don't. So now here we are, because it is a problem in the community, and it's a lack of knowledge. It's not the people who don't care, because time and time again, people care. It's shown because the participation that the community gives immediately back. And that's what pretty much fits Baltimore. So we start off by doing potholes. We do community cleanups. But we're like an empowerment group. We empower each other. We encourage each other. So all of the members pretty much answer questions that we all have to face in our day-to-day life. And I think that's one of the things that keeps us together and has brought Six Baltimore here and funded it, like started itself.
So when did you actually form Six Baltimore? Because I've heard about it for a while, just in the circles that, you know, if you are a person who cares about your community in Baltimore, if you're involved in social activism, then, you know, we all pretty much run in the same kind of circles, all end up, you know, vibing together. So I had heard whispers about Six Baltimore before I even made the step to come to a cleanup. So when did you guys actually form, and who were the original founders with you?
Okay. So Six Baltimore actually started, the first cleanup day was May 31st. The first day we decided to meet, it was myself, Maurice Ashley, Floyd was there, and I believe two or three other people. And we all actually came together for helping Maurice out with an agricultural project he had, which is where one of the cleanups we did for the urban farm was. And we wound up getting delayed 30 days for the lease. And so I was like, we came too far to just die down and not do something. I said, okay, let's use the group Fix Baltimore. That was the name that we spoke on like at the meeting. And I was a concept I came up with, a pitch to everybody. I said, all right, Fix Baltimore, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to meet up and plant flowers in a pothole. Maurice and myself, ironically, like, we both must have seen the picture the same day and sent each other the same message, like, on different social media outlets. So he hit me up, like, on Facebook, and I hit sent him, like, a message or something. So it was just intertwined that we met. So that's one of the first people I met up with, because when we met up, we got our tools and we got the flowers and everything we needed, and we organized the day before. So the first day we started was May 31st.
Okay. Now, what is the idea for the flowers and the potholes, which is actually, when you actually see it, you know, I haven't seen it in person, but when I saw the pictures, I mean, it actually just trips you out because,
yeah,
I mean, there were a lot of flowers in potholes.
Yeah, but it's beautiful. It's like those pictures where you see the rose coming out of concrete. It's actually a beautiful sight to see.
Thank you. Well, we actually have good soil. We're Baltimoreans, and this is something that produced. It came from, we came from this, and we're like that symbol, the rose that came through the concrete. But we're not just a regular rose. We're a fist. We came together. I want people to understand that I don't really lead Fix Baltimore. Fix Baltimore is a group full of leaders, and what I do is I inspire leaders. Just to continue to pursue their dreams. I wanted this to be a place where leaders can come together and collectively share their ideas in a group or a tribe with like-minded individuals that will continue to do the same thing. And the flower in the pothole, it came to be because I almost lost my life. My my tire came off my car while I was driving, and that's when I got first introduced to 311, the potholes, and how to go about making a change of it. And a lot of people remember the Fitz Baltimore. We actually were in a group before called Empowerment. And we all have a friend, she's no longer with us, her name was Kalana. And a lot of the things we deal with now with the police. What did you say?
No, I said rest in peace. I remember her.
Yeah. So we met, like, I believe it was Maurice, EJ, myself, and a lot of other people who have done a lot of things in the city. We all met before in meetings, and after everything happened with her, like, I really felt bad, and I really got into contact with a lot of people, and then the uprising happened. And we were just going to a random protest. I would see members of Fitz Baltimore. Like, I didn't know that they were members at the time because it wasn't established yet, but it was constantly, we were always there. And after seeing these people there fighting for the same cause I'm fighting for and actually doing something other than just retweeting it and out there taking pictures, these people were out there rallying. EJ and Maurice were selling out Freddie Gray's shirts, Civil Wrongs. Shout out EJ. And I was like, wait, y'all didn't stop. Y'all kept going. And I wanted to get plugged in. And so we met up some more, and we kept seeing each other at different events. And Beatrice and myself, we actually went down to the CES and did a cleanup there. In the middle of, after it was burned down and everything, this is when we realized the difference, the power of unity came in and how we could really directly impact a difference. So we started cleaning up the CVS. They told us, oh, you got to stop because it's dangerous in here. The cellar might collapse. You could die. I'm like, it's over 40, 50 armed police officers with rifles and assault rifles outside. I'm more likely to die outside out there than I am in here. I said, so we started cleaning up. And that's when I was, all right, everybody, let's get an assembly line going. And we started working together. And from us working together and seeing people just giving this, they all were like-minded, all had the same purpose, and just giving the opportunities of, like, look, you have a gift. We all can just do it here. Pass it to this person, pass it to this person, and keep going. And we started a line to where we started moving debris to the front of the CVS, just cleaning up together, taking brooms and going in rows and moving the debris. And from seeing this, I'm like, man, people have an urge now. People are giving more of a push to actually come together. And what I've seen a lot over these last couple of months is, since the uprising, which people don't speak on, is the unity. People have come together. We have gotten sick of it. You're seeing more groups now come together to try to stop and make ideas. Like, it's so many people out there that want to make a difference and believe in themselves. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's really a great thing, and it makes me proud watching you all. Now, for someone looking from the outside or listening to this call or just seeing on Facebook, how can you become a part of Fitz Baltimore? Because I know for me it's a lot of familiar faces. So for someone that doesn't know someone in the mix or whatever, how can they get in contact with you, or is there a process, or do they just show up? Like, how can you be a part of Fitz Baltimore?
Well, basically, all you would do is, look out for our hashtag, post events, and make it out to these events. If you can't make it out in person, get in contact with one of the people that's pretty much sharing it. We'll also start posting the links to our website so you can directly see the bios of the members and see how to get in contact with them via social media. This happened, I promise you, this happened overnight. So this wasn't something that we anticipated. The success of this was due to the great number of people that came out and supported us. And so many people from behind the scenes that are doing such phenomenal things that definitely need to be given credit to in the development of what we've done. But if you're looking outside, also you can engage by dialing in to these locations. Go out to one of these sites. We post the address. Go there. And then see where the trash is, and then dial 311 and report it. See where the pothole is, and dial 311 and report it. You see a flower in a pothole, call 311 and report it. It takes us as a community to do this. So we can be the unity in the community. All it takes is just a simple action followed by multiple actions all in the same accord. We're trying to get the vote fixed. It can happen with strength in numbers. So it's power to the people.
Yes, yes, very much so. So when I know it's getting cold outside, do you guys have any events coming up or any meetings coming up that someone who's interested can attend or
yes.
can join?
Yes, starting in February, we're pretty much going to have our we have a lot more indoor events. We're going to have some workshops, so we'll be in places where we're doing, like, I guess you could call it services or art services or just giving back or community services, just indoor events. But we also, I will briefly speak on, we will have a program to where you can participate by growing the flower to give to us to donate, to plant in a pothole. And this is where you can be more involved, even if you can't make it out there. You can drop off your flower, and we can get your flower planted in the pothole, and you can do your part by continuing to report the pothole. Get your family members to report that pothole. Say, hey, this is our pothole. Let's see how many of us can call in and how long it's going to take for them to fix this pothole.
Yeah. That's dope.
Very-
I'm excited. I'm going to be here.
Yes.
But I want to pick your brain about something to kind of get off of Fix Baltimore for a second. We're going to come back.
All right.
But how do you feel about, you touched on this a little bit, but how do you feel about the current climate in Baltimore? When I know for myself, when the mistrial happened with Officer Porter's, with Officer Porter's case, the news media was here as if they were itching for us to burn this fucking city down. You know, it was like they were just ready. You had them on every corner downtown, just ready for a story. And our city, we didn't feed into that. It was like a very, I wouldn't say a nonchalant response, but it was like we were kind of non-reactive. So do you think that's indicative of people kind of like losing steam, or do you think that we're just being more strategic and focusing on rebuilding our communities instead of battling a system that we know hates us anyway?
I think people are waking up. They understand that a single simple-minded action based off of them fighting a huge entity such as, you know, our police force and all the people that work with them, it's not necessary. I don't feel like the city lost its fire or its spunk or its drive or its ambitions because we're tired. We keep on dying, and we're seeing our city kill us slowly, and we're not ignorant to it. Some of us might be complacent, but most of us are tired, and that hasn't left our eyes. You can see the tiredness. You can see that we understand that this is a battle. If you are from Baltimore, you know what a knocker is. It's a wholly different concept of police brutality. We know this fully well. We know that you drive in the right neighborhood at the right time with the right car, these people will violate your rights, period. And there's nothing that we do about it. Name how many cases have we won against the knockers. Like, they're so protected, and we deal with this form of brutality on a regular basis. And so we see it, and then we see the housing conditions, and we see how they're pushing us out, and the gentrification is happening, and the effects of the redlining and the lead paint. We see it. We're tired. How many kids in 2016 are going to now have, or new cases we're going to have of kids with lead paint poisoning? How many more frayed grades are we going to create this year? Because we're not doing anything. Why haven't these homes that's been reported repeatedly about lead paint being there, or these schools not been demolished beforehand? What happened to the money we funneled in beforehand to do this and deal with this problem? Why is it now just being brought up?
That's true. That's very true. And I read an article today that the governor actually launched a new project for, I think, $700 million to demolish so-called urban decay. They're going to be knocking down the vacant houses in the city. They're putting $700 million into that, but they also just closed, I think, 4 or 5 city schools as well.
Correct. So you clearly see that, one, they don't care about the future. They only care about the potential voters, the potential people who could actually support them, the people that are going to work but are struggling to get by, that can continue to feed into the system that oppresses them. That's who they focus on. It's clear in every day-to-day language. They're focused on the dollar. How can we produce more consumers? And people, that's why it's a huge turnaround for investing in flipping houses. You purchase a home, you get it fixed up, and you flip it. I wonder why. It's not a coincidence. It's not. And then it's easy to flip a house if you know contractors, if you know people that can fix it. And so then it goes really into those who are look like you. So then if you have the knowledge, and generally people that have knowledge of these things and the resources are typically Caucasian Americans. They're not from urban communities. So they don't have the knowledge or access to the level of education that these people are offered, nor without the stress of getting shot, getting robbed, getting assaulted by the police on a day-to-day life. So the lifestyles that we live and where we come from are different. And if you don't see that the people in the urban communities aren't the ones voting, aren't the ones contributing, other than the side effect or reacting, we're not acting, we're reacting. And that's the problem. That's what's killing us, the fact that we continue to react to these problems that we need to act on.
Definitely. And I think it's great that now there is more of an awareness, because we have to come together. If one person can teach us contracts and another person can teach us real estate, we can buy our own debt. Like, we're getting, they're selling our properties for dirt cheap. Like, it's not like these white people are coming in here spending lots of dough. Like, they're dropping 11,000. Like, I was going through the DC properties one day. It's row houses for $11,000, $10,000. Like, most people's cars are worth less than that when you first buy it. And you telling me you can buy a property that you can flip, but these things are not known to us. We don't know the grants and the laws that are given to different states, because there's also, you know, first homeowner loans as well as programs and all that stuff. But if these things are not disseminated to our people, then there's no way of knowing these things. Because what's going to happen in Baltimore, from what you just said about that article, is what's going to happen in D.C.? If you ride around D.C., now every hood, it's a wonderful-ass condo next to that, bitch. It's a beautiful little cafe. It's a hookah lounge. It's you know, some mom-and-pop or some, like, hipster restaurant. And then it's a liquor store. And then the Section 8 housing, and then you go do it over and over again. So now these neighborhoods that traditionally black people that still have high in crime, Sally and Johnny walking down the street, and you like, hold up, what happened? But they just bought this house dirt cheap while you paying rent next door or whatever the case may be. Like, we have to, as a community, empower each other, educate each other to do these things. If you can pool together with some friends and be like, look, let's get this, let's fix this shit up, we can go have rent it out and still make money and help your community as well as help yourself. Like, it's a win-win for everybody in the situation. If you're in a better community, your property value goes up. The government looks at you differently. Police now come around more because it looks better, or whatever the case may be. Or they're not coming around to see what's happening. They're coming around to patrol and make sure the shit stay nice. So that's what white people do. You know, like, so it's certain things, I think, it's certain attitudes and mentalities that we have to develop, because paying rent ain't it. Like, especially when you're in these properties, when you can buy something or whatever the case may be, or get a loan. And I know everyone is not in the position to do that, but there are programs literally out here where you can get a mean deal. All you have to do is have a job. Like, it's shit out there for everybody, and we just have to educate ourselves and you know, really do it. And I'm proud of you guys, and it's proud to be speaking with you as well as when we have Maurice on the line, to have young kings and queens, like, really trying to make this happen. Like, most people are like, what's a pothole? Like, what's putting a flower in a pothole going to do? But I think I remember one of your posts, or I saw one of your posts where you were like, we put the flower in a pothole, and not too long after, they came and filled the rest of the potholes, or they came and filled that one and another one. Like,
yes.
If we see it differently, maybe they'll see it differently. We have to look at ourselves and provide a better reflection for other people to see. And I think that's something we have to see and believe within ourselves. So I'm happy to have you guys on the line and have talked to Maurice and EJ and everyone else that we've really had on the call. Like, it makes me proud to see the awakening happening, right? It's happening.
Speaking of Maurice, hey, Maurice, are you there? Maybe he doesn't know that I took him off mute. Maurice, are you there?
Hello, there are you?
Yes. Hey, Peace King, what's going on?
Hey, Peace, how are you?
Peace, Maurice, how are you?
Peace.
Oh, hello. What's good? I saw you there on the line. Yeah, I saw you there on the line, so I just figured that I would bring you in since we were speaking about you. How are you today? Congratulations on the new young prince.
Yes, we got baby King coming.
Well, King coming, you know, I don't want to wish, you know, too much on him already, but he has a job to do with, you know, saving our people. So, it's my mini queen's first birthday as well, so I'm a happy man today.
Hey.
There you go.
I would just like to say that reveal video was the cutest reveal video I have seen online thus far. It was so adorable.
For our listeners, you may be a little bit confused right now, but we actually have Maurice Ashby on the line. He is a phenomenal person. He actually was one of our first, he was our first guest on the show. Him and EJ came and they blessed us. Now, if you have a couple seconds, I did want to ask a question, and I wanted to pose that to you and Casey. We were talking about voting, and, you know, we have an election coming up here in Baltimore. So I wanted to get the opinion of both of you, Kings. Are any of the candidates actually speaking to you? Is there anyone that stands out in this race to you? Because there's a lot of people who are running for mayor in Baltimore and other offices as well. So is there anyone, is there any candidates who stand out to you? And also, how do you guys feel about the voting process as a whole?
You want me to start with that?
Yeah, you want to say fine.
So I've been kind of battling on this post, as I've been controlling with some of my philosophies out there.
Wait. Do you have the phone? We can't hear you. Do you have the phone on speaker?
Yeah, can you hear me better?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay, cool. So it's one of the things I've been battling with in my philosophies is voting and the system of voting and how we can utilize that for the struggle of Black liberation. I'm an F-the-system type of character, I would say, but with kind of maturing, I'm realizing that we have power within all realms in which Black people exist, right? So the key is organizing the energy of Black people in these realms to be collective enough and effective enough to overcome whatever system or code or statute is set up against them. So, to answer your question, I think voting in the system, we have power within it. It's only going to be useful if it's done collectively and effectively and through proper education. That's the only way I would advocate for us moving forward within the voting system, if we can go about it that way.
No, okay, I guess I'll say my piece. The voting process, I feel it is very effective and impactful. But if you don't know what you're voting for, how to vote, how to make your vote count, educate yourself before you vote. Don't just go out there and vote blindly, because then it's going to produce the mentality of, I voted, I went voted for this person, and they didn't do exactly what I wanted them to do, or a lot of my needs didn't get met or got unlooked and nothing ever was done about it, because you didn't do anything else other than vote. And that's all you're educated on. So if you don't know how to properly react and then hold the politicians accountable, the city officials accountable, go to your community board meetings, or like your homeowners meeting, like if you don't know how to do these things and not seeking education, then you're playing a dangerous game in a system of that will actually set out go against you. This is a huge entity we're going against. And you going out there not knowing what power you have is extremely reckless. So I think people need to educate themselves before they even make the decision of voting or involving themselves in this process.
And I want to ask that. Can I add real quick?
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, most of us, so there's a duality in consciousness in which we exist, which I exist. One is in the citizen mindhood, and one is in the free man, or with the sovereign mentality or sovereign spirituality kind of realm. If you are a citizen and already participating in the system in the game, you're already going to work, you're already paying your taxes, you already got a driver's license, you already got this, you might as well use your power to vote, because you're using your power to do everything else other than vote. So if you are already participating in the system but you're not voting, using your power to vote, I don't see why not you would not vote. So I think people need to consider that as well.
Agreed, 100%.
That's very true. And what I was going to say is, you know, right now, well, I'm just wrapping up Black Label White Wealth by Dr. Carl Anderson. And he actually speaks about the process by which the black community, we are really big with the block voting. We will mobilize behind a candidate. However, it's so often that the political leaders, as soon as we vote them in, they completely abandon us because we don't have the financial backing behind the candidates. So do you think that here in Baltimore there needs to be more actual lobbying in the black community? Do you think that we as enlightened people should actually be collectively putting our funds behind candidates that we deem are speaking to our interests?
Okay, I guess I'll go first on this one. Financially, we actually can support. It's just we have to actually feel like there's some type of power or some type of influence that we can give to the process of our day-to-day lives and making it better. So we just don't we don't know how to actually give the money in a proper way to where it's going to bring about that change, bring about that effect. And I feel like yes, but if we're taught or educated and it's put in our daily lives, we can make a difference by doing this. We can make a difference to solve this problem by simply doing this. And it's all based on the system that we live in. Like Maurice, we're paying taxes. So with that, it unlocks certain doors to privileges that we have as citizens. And we just need to utilize it. The information is there for us. It's just not given to us on a silver platter like the things we learn in grade school, because they'll give you that on a silver platter all day. And we get accustomed to that. We need to also be accustomed to seeing our day-to-day life problems and seeking answers for them via self-education as well.
So I agree with a lot of that. The way I look at it with funding politics, we know that this society, this nation, is a corporation, so it takes money to move anything. And for democracy to move, you need a lot of money to get your person up there, to get into the meetings, to get into the caucuses, to get into all these things. That require that amount of movement. With black people in general, we found a way to subvert some of the attacks of the system by making making the least of making the most of the least. So what I would hope that we could do in the voting system, even if we don't have the necessary capital, which it takes millions and billions of dollars to even get to the president's race, that we somehow utilize that mentality in order to make the fund or make the best of our political campaigns as well. I mean, the Black Panthers are a good example of us doing that within the last 40 years. I think we need to kind of reevaluate some of those models as well and kind of advance on them. The other point I wanted to make was that the best way for a collective body of Black people to protest the government that they have right now would be to stop paying them the money that moves the government.
Yes, pretty much.
So if you can educate yourself on the supposed tax code that they say that you owe for income tax, and you start calculating your own things and you cut the IRS out, you may find the truth within your, you know, figuring out your own finances that maybe you don't owe them so much, or maybe you don't even owe them at all. And then you take that 30% that they were taking out of your income and somehow reinvest it into your community or a politician or a church or a Black business. So we just have to kind of divest from the system and reinvest it into our own system or into the current system that we live in now, but within a more economical mindset that brings up our communities rather than funds the Jews, the Asians, and all the other nationalities that don't benefit us. So that's all I got to say on that one.
Are there any candidates that are in the Baltimore mayor race and the other and the city councilman races? Are there any candidates at all who actually stand out to you as leaders who could have some kind of positive impact on our city?
From right now, from my personal experience and who I have spoken to, I can give you names, but that does not validate who they are or if they're cool or if they're not cool. But what I would say is the candidates that I'm focused on and I'm looking at, because they're in our age bracket and they do have a platform that is more so corporate-minded and they understand the Baltimore City Charter and how to navigate it, those two candidates, one would be Joshua Harris for mayor and the other one would be Calvin Young for mayor. For city council, I don't have any I don't believe in the city council at all. I don't even believe that they can do anything. I at one time wanted to run for city council. That's kind of why I'm where I'm at now. In 2016, I wanted to run, but I don't have any faith that the city council has any power to make any change in Baltimore City at all.
Casey?
Oh, yes, I'm here. Well, I do. It's really difficult to speak on the voting process and the system here, but I definitely have found that there's been being in Fix Baltimore has opened up the door to politicians to speak with me. So I've met at least 6 mayoral candidates, and the one that spoke out to me multiple times is Joshua Harris. So that's one, but based on the fact that he's active in the community, I've recognized that, and I've seen him out there as doing one of his cleanups or organizing one of his events, and it was directly across the street from where we did ours, and we just did it on different days. But we come together because we speak on positive change in the community. And we have other mayoral candidates. I definitely remember I met Calvin Young, I believe, twice. And he definitely is, I see him, being active in the development of what we're doing. Also, I want to speak on Christopher Irvin. I think he's running for, are you running for city council?
Oh, yeah. Christopher Irvin, sorry. I didn't just speak on that one. Christopher
yeah.
Irvin is running for city council.
I
want to say it's the 11th district.
yeah, I think it is.
To put that on the record, I fully support Christopher Irvin.
Yeah, because he came out okay, I'll say this much. Christopher Irvin was there in the beginning, when we did the cleanup or at the Irvin Farm
Urban Funk Remix.
It was October. I know he came out October 11th. I believe he came out there on July 11th. So yeah, that's definitely. Yeah, he has my full support as well. So I definitely. I would say my support goes to Joshua Harris and Chris Irvin.
Yeah, sorry for me, Mr. Speaker. That's the only candidate in City Council I think to do something with Christopher Irvin. So just put that out there. Sorry.
Okay, so I want to switch gears real quick because Maurice, your father, and Casey, you said that you had a close relationship with your father as well. And when we were interviewing Ron and KLX from What's Up Africa, they both spoke to the relationship that they had with their fathers as well. And just listening to you guys, it made me think about, you know, the power of Black fatherhood. So I wanted to know if you guys would touch on that. You know, I know it's a departure from what we were speaking on, but it's so powerful for young men to have strong Black men in their lives and speak about what, you know, Black fatherhood means to you.
I mean, that's a heavy one because in 2009 my father passed away, so and he was like the strongest Black man I ever knew. So it's kind of in my maturing process and being without him for the last 5 years, I've kind of gotten to the place I am now. So I've used that 21 years experience I had with him on this earth and his experience. Him raising me to kind of fuel who I am now. And if I didn't have that, if, you know, that was not non-existent in my life, I possibly could not be here on this earth right now. So the example that a father sets is a testament to the nation that comes or the mentality of the nation that comes after him. Or, you know, that's what follows. That's the seed drops, you know, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. So that is what I kind of try to live up to every day, is that idea of who my father was and what his spirit was and what his goals were, too, for my family and his friends and the community. So that without that example, I don't know who I would be as a man, as a Black man, as a human being on this earth.
Yes, and I guess that's another thing we have in common. My father passed in 2002, so I've had to deal with, you know, that as well, seeing a very positive male role model. My father was a phenomenal man. He had custody of me when I was from 6 to, I believe, 13, so he directly was the parent that was there every day raising me, and me and my mom have a phenomenal relationship, and she made, like, a great sacrifice to actually just say, no, you know what, you can have a better life with your father. Like, she clearly seen it, and everybody could see it. So to have that example placed in front of me, I've always had, you know, just big shoes to fill. And seeing somebody that impactful in everyday life of people that came into interaction with him, I see it was a huge responsibility that was given to me. A lot of the lessons he's taught me, I use in my day-to-day life, and I use them to, I guess, fight battle what we have to be as Black men. And it's these things that can keep me grounded, keep me solid, and keep me able to be so successful with change in the community. So having a very powerful male role model, a figure in your life, is very impactful. Just even going off statistics, like, you can clearly see the difference in the choices that some of us make and going forward and how we raise families and how we raise communities and how we raise ourselves based off of that male figure in our lives, where we're actually able to find comfort and confidence and poise.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted you to speak to that because the way that I've observed you met, and I actually just met you guys relatively recent, within the last couple of months. But the way that you guys carry yourselves, I mean, it's just this aura that surrounds both of you of such greatness. And that's not something that can be built of alone. You know, that comes from the confidence that's put into you ever since that you're a child. You know, I can speak to having a strong family behind me. I lost my mother in 2005, and we were extremely close. Actually, rest in peace, Sandy B. The 10-year anniversary of her death just passed on December 23rd. But I know what it is to have that parent there that is extremely influential in your life. And in Baltimore, I see so many children who are searching in the streets for that. They are searching for that. They run the streets all night looking for that type of acceptance. So would you guys ever consider maybe mentoring or, you know, taking kids, especially some young black men, under your wing? Do you think that we need more programs like that in Baltimore to, you know, kind of guide these young black men who are out here in the streets?
I think with both of us, you know, we have a skill and a craft that we want to share with our community, with our people, with our brothers, with our sisters that are out here with those same things and with nothing to do or looking for something to lead them or to interest them, to attract them to something better than what they're experiencing now. So for me, I'm a computer geek. I'm a nerd. I'm a musician. I'm an agriculturalist. So what I would want to do and how I have bases in which I can communicate well and also build relationships with people is with group activities. So I would love to create a space in the future that includes like a computer station or a music production station or just an outdoor garden for learning this. We just kind of need the spaces collectively to do these things in order for them to manifest. But yes, that is kind of the goal of kind of wanting to be leaders now, is to be leaders in the future to where we can be the people that a certain sect of our warrior class looks up to be. I mean, that's what the basketball players are. That's what some of the, you know, the hood, the gangsters are, even movie gangsters or even the street gangsters. That's what they are. We want to be that role model too. For our community. So I think that's both of our intents in there, hopefully, you know, in the future to get to that level.
Yeah, I definitely agree. People tend to believe more based off of what they've seen you do. We can talk about what we can do all day. If we don't show it, how would you ever believe it? And one of the things it's definitely our goal to actually be a huge impact or be that positive male role model to these people. I remember we had a conversation before, right? Before Fix Baltimore started, a question had dawned on me. I said, can you name three positive black role models under 30? And within a matter of 8 months, we stepped up to the plate and became those.
Mm-hmm.
And it manifested because it was constant action. We had to show the people that we were exactly what we were speaking of. And the change that we're talking of and the knowledge which you can learn from this and how you can benefit your community from this, you can actually go to school and they're not promoting it. They're not showing you on TV that you can be a successful computer programmer, agriculturalist on television. They're hyping up these other things that just statistically speaking are pretty much these far-fetched dreams if you don't have 100% of the talent there. If that's not what you're destined to be, but it's glorified in front of you on a day-to-day basis, you could definitely get distracted from your true purpose in life. And I see that a lot going on. And it's only because it's not their fault. It's just people aren't exposed to what they love on a constant basis because most people that they look up to aren't doing things that they love. They're doing things they think you like about them or make you think them popular. Or chasing that degree. But the second we start doing more as a community, the things we love to do, the kids will then start believing more in themselves and then off of our positive actions in life, their reaction will be, I got bigger shoes to fill in my community. I remember Sister Johnson at the end of the street, she did this for 11 years straight, and she won first prize. And at the end of the day, they wanted to give her a house for free that they rebuilt. These type of examples need to be set for us by us doing what we're doing now, the constant involvement and activity and engagement and the betterment of our people.
Yeah. I completely agree. And that actually just took me away. Just listening to the passion that you guys have, and I just see such great things from you. I see you, both of you, continuing to build, because you've already built so much over the past couple of months. You know, and Casey, I know that you happen to be an artist as well. So, do you want to tell us a little bit about your welding?
Oh yes. So I started welding in around 2007. And it then grew from there. I think I've always been an artist. I've always drawn and painted, but it never really like fulfilled me in a way that I was looking for. So when I did the welding, I think one day I did a piece for an ex-girlfriend. I couldn't afford a gift, and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna make her one. So I made her a nameplate and sent it to her. And I never made one other piece again until I met Carlotta. And she asked for a project. She said, do what you love, but make a sign out of what you love and use whatever gift you have, whatever talent you have that makes you unique. And I was like, I don't know too many welders, and I don't think there are too many people out there that can do this. So I drew on a piece of metal, and I like stenciled it out like how a tattoo artist draws on your arm. And then I used TIG welding tattooed on the metal. And but due to the type of heat that I used, it caused a different color. And I just use that to be as my medium. That's my outlet. That's my escape. That's letting people inside of my head. This is what I see on a day-to-day basis.
So how did you start welding or learn how to weld? Because that's not like picking up a brush or a pen, like, oh, one day I said I was going to draw my girlfriend. So, and I think this also piggybacks off of what we were talking about. Like, there's so many ways of expression as well as arts and things that you can do that probably you would never think of. So how did you learn to weld and, you know, that whole process? What got you into that?
In 2006, I was homeless and all, but I was in school. So I was in college, and it was snowing out, and my aunt and uncle took me in. So shout out to my aunt Tammy and Kevin Seymour. So and I had walking pneumonia, so they nursed me back to health. I think it was January 9th of 2007, I started working for Seymour Welding. And from there, my uncle, he showed me how to, weld. It started off with welding. It started off with metal fabrication. So I learned the basics of just fabrication from day one. And I was always taught that, and I wasn't that great of a welder. So I wound up going to Florida and going to a welding school. So I had all of these concepts and the drive to learn how to weld, because I knew I had, it was like an equation, like 2 + 2 = 4. I had one of the twos, but I needed the other two to make the four. But I already knew how to make the four already. I just knew what I was lacking, and I went after it. And I even got put out of school with straight A's and never missed a day of attendance, but I couldn't afford to pay. And on my birthday, they kicked me out of school, and I didn't give up. I called back, I talked to somebody else, and I made the right moves by not giving up on my dreams, and I knew that's what I was supposed to be at. I knew welding was it, because I almost died, and it kept me alive. And I was like, you know what? It's not going to fail me then, and it's not going to fail me now. So I'm like, it's not over. And so I kept at it. And sure enough, because I stuck with welding, it opened up the door. The school was like, you know what? You do have funding here, and in 30 days they're going to send it to you. So you get a waiver for 30 days. And then sure enough, the money came in, and I was able to pay for the rest of my tuition, and I finished welding school with my two cousins, and we All three of us graduated together, and both of them actually at one point came and worked at Seymour Welding. So my idea was to take my what I could do, and I brought my people with me. And since then, I think we've employed four people that went to my welding school. My welding school was in Florida.
Wow, that's an amazing story. You can't talk about your welding and leave all that out, Casey. Like,
I know, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great background. A lot of people don't know. Like, Fix Baltimore is really the replica of what happened. I was taught a skill. From that skill, I was given the ability to answer questions or troubleshoot.
Mm-hmm.
And I want people to understand, so what, you can't move into a mansion? But what if you knew how to build a shed? And then from there, you had to drive to actually build your own house. And it might have started from you building a table because you wanted to have some type of furniture. You couldn't afford the nice furniture, but you went out your way and you handcrafted your own table to put food on. Imagine if we lived in that world where we then created answers to these problems that we face on a day-to-day basis. And we taught our kids that. And so when our kids go to high school and they're 18 about to graduate, they already know how to grow their own foods. They know how to build solar panels. They know how to purify water. They know how to build a table. They know how to build a home. They know how to run electricity. They know how to vote. They know how to change a tire. They know these things. And so then when they go out into the world, are you that less worried about your child failing? No, you raised a successful leader. This person's going to lead themselves to success. But we have to first learn it in order for us to teach it.
Very true. That's an amazing point.
Speak, black man.
So where can we see the artwork? Or is there, do you have any, exhibitions? Or is there, how can someone see your artwork?
I'm actually, you have to look up, that's Steven-wise, he actually looked out to me at Hotel RL. I'll be out there. I want to say it's either February 4th or 7th. I can't remember the exact date. I'll actually be displaying my artwork there. And another one on the 13th. I will not disclose the location yet because it's two events and I haven't made my mind which one I'm going to be in. so it's difficult. I definitely need to get a website going. It's just Fix Baltimore right now is definitely my priority. And I do use my art to help fund Fix Baltimore. So I want people to understand this too. When I'm out here pitching my art, please know this money is directly going to buying supplies, getting information out to people, and it really is to Fix Baltimore.
How can people donate to Fix Baltimore?
Okay, we have a PayPal account. Unfortunately, we had to just get it. We just got it started, so I'll have that posted later on this week. So you can go to my page or one of the fellow members of Fix Baltimore, and we'll post that on there. And what we're going to do is we want people to know, this does work. Your funding goes so far, and your donations go so far, and your volunteer work goes so far. It's about us. So if you don't have the money, that's fine. You have a phone, pick up, and dial 311. A lot of people don't know, and I definitely want to speak on this with 311. If you have a vehicle and you're driving your vehicle on the road and you hit a pothole, pull over, dial 311 and report the pothole to location, everything. Take a picture of it, and they'll give you a confirmation number. 311 will give you a confirmation number. In 2 to 3 days, they'll send you a letter in the mail with you to fill out and pretty much your basic information. Now, understand that it's in the Baltimore City Charter that the roads is city property, and they use our tax dollars to repair the roads and keep them properly in upstanding conditions for citizens. However, if they're not, it's our job as citizens to then activate our city officials by dialing 311. So if your vehicle is damaged, take your vehicle to a mechanic. They'll give you an estimate for free. They're like Pep Boys. They'll pick your carb in the air, they'll look at it, and they'll tell you this is wrong, this is wrong. Well, if it's your rims, your tires, the front end alignments, your shocks,
front end damage, all of any of this that can actually that actually came from the pothole, the city will reimburse you your money. You just have to go through the form. It'll take a couple of weeks, and they'll send you a check in the mail. But the
more
people
apply
to
DC too.
Yes.
Right.
And the more people do it, the more people do it and report that pothole, the quicker they come and fix the road. Please understand, my goal is to end all potholes because, like I said, I almost died. So it's not a joke. It's not a game. It's not a gimmick. It's not a scam. You have to be active in your community. Please understand, like, I'm talking, like, if you're driving to and from work, this is your regular route, and you hit a pothole, report that. If you're out with your family and you're going to the grocery store, you hit a pothole, report that. It's our problem, and we can fix it. We are the answer.
Yeah, they're not driving around looking for potholes to fix for us, so you definitely have to take your own action. That's what gets it done. When people start complaining and making noise, when the white people want stop signs in their neighborhood for their children and all that other stuff, and they make that noise, they get them damn stop signs. So we need to do the same and report it and just use the avenues provided. I know that people are like, oh, well, I'm going to get my check in a couple weeks. You can do that or you can not get a check at all. That's fine, but you can get your car fixed as well as help everyone else and possibly save someone else's life. Like, them potholes ain't no joke, and them things can put out 2 or 4 tires. I've had several people that have had very serious issues with potholes, and unless you don't report it, no one's going to help you pay for that.
This goes for trash as well. Trash and debris, the trash bringing rats and mice, and people wonder why, because we're not calling 311 and getting in their ass and saying, you need to come out here and get this trash. I'm going to keep calling every day until you come get this trash. For Baltimore, we get together and do community cleanups. So we'll gather the trash. And at first, we were just taking the trash and throwing it away. And we were like, no, this is what bulk trash is for. This is what our tax dollars is for. Let's use our tax dollars and activate the people in the community. Okay, everybody, we all want to see the trash problem gone. It's only going to start by us acting on it. So we picked up the trash, got it here, the one location, got everyone in the community, call 311 and report this. And even we get together every day in the community and we designate from 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock, we're going to call 311. Or 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock, we're going to keep calling and reporting, then so be it. That's how people can get active in their community and be a change and then see real power and then see real change from them uniting.
Exactly. Black power. Now, we got about 15 minutes left. Before we wrap, Maurice, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Good, because I want you to tell us about Wifey's new yoga studio. I saw that you guys were looking for funding, so go ahead, tell us all about that.
Yes, we are interested. Well, we are actually implementing the business plan, but we secured a location for a yoga shop, and if you want to check it out, with New Secrets Yoga is the name of my queen, Nunu Norton's new yoga shop. We're trying to open up on 25th Street. So right in the Remington neighborhood, right by Terra Cafe. We are looking for some investors as well. So if you are an interested investor, we do have a package that she can send to you. It's really well detailed, really well put out. They spark your interest. You can send an email showing your interest to Nunu, which is N-E-W-N-E-W, at newsecrets.net. And she'll respond to you. She'll send out that package to you. But, yeah, if anybody's looking to invest in a black yoga studio in Baltimore, please. It's going to happen. But if you want to be invested in it, please get in contact with us.
Are you also looking for small-scale donors as well? Because I know that you're looking for large investors. But what if people just want to, you know? Yeah.
So if you do, I mean, offerings of love of the heart without any investment opportunities are welcome too. I would use the same email address to get in contact with Nunu. But any donation towards the effort, sure, it can send you the business plan and let you know that it's legit and what we're doing is solid. So if you want to give any amount, $1, $2, $5, $10, $20, $50, $100, that's all accepted in love as well.
That's exciting.
One more thing. Casey, can you please tell us about your experience at RBG Fridays? I mean, RBG Fridays. Real quick. But I was just like, oh, my gosh, I wish I could have been there, but I was spending time with my family. But I wanted to hit you up like, yo, take me, please.
Yeah, it was love. Okay, so basically, it's a pretty much an organization, and it's more than just people out there waving a black flag. They're handing out information about pretty much typical problems in the urban community amongst the black people, like what type of things are we dealing with on a day-to-day basis. And it's very informative. They're going out there and letting them know, like, it's okay to be black. It's okay to be proud. There's nothing wrong with it. And this is a safe place for you to come and express yourself and express your black, I guess, what do you call it? Hella black, hella proudness, so to say.
Blacktivation, you know.
Black now, Black Today, that's what we
got to do. Oh, and in case you guys do not know what we're talking about, RGB Fridays is an event in Philly. I think it's on Broad Street, and do you remember the location on the top of your head?
I do not remember. No, I do not remember the other name.
But it is a Philly event where you see a lot of, I saw the videos on Facebook, and the energy, you know, just that spirit of black power, you see it all in the air for real. It is a collective of people who, you know, they just hang out on Fridays, and they do have that flag. You know, they are waving the flag, but it's a lot of love and community and unity that they are spreading. So if you are in Philly on a Friday night and you have, you know, nothing to do, or you're looking for something to do and to be a part of, you definitely want to check that out. I know that Reds and KLX from What's Up Africa, they usually go just about every week unless they're traveling on the road. So you could definitely hit them up for more information. And did you guys have any closing thoughts? We have about 10 minutes left.
I'll make this brief. I do want to let everyone know in the city who's seen us, who supported us, who thought about supporting us, who came out, volunteered, who's endured the many days of us activating in the community. Thank you. Thank you so much. This really started from an idea, and the fact that in a matter of 8 months, we've actually made it this far, and it's a huge, huge opportunity to be a difference. And we want to thank you all from, I believe, all of us at Fish Baltimore. And we have a lot of great things in store for 2016, and we want you all to continue to support us and see what great things we're going to do for the city. And like I said, thank you again. Thank you for having me on the show. Thank you for having me on my recent show and giving us a platform to let people know exactly what we do and who we are.
We appreciate having you on. I mean, it's I know Facebook is so big but so small, so it's like we definitely feel like our friends should know who you are, our friends' friends should know who y'all are. Like, we're just trying to spread the word, trying to connect people together so we can do the things that, you know, you guys are doing or something along those lines, or use that as a model to inspire ourselves, our community. So it's amazing, and we definitely appreciate it. And thank you for being on the show, Casey and Maurice, two times. We appreciate you. You know, we might have to bring you in as a permanent guest from now on or something every now and then, but we really appreciate it. And I know I'm very grateful to have you kings on the line.
Because I know I just kind of pulled you in, but y'all are a team. You know, when I see one, I usually see the other. And if I don't see the other, I'm always like, well, where's Casey? Where's Maurice? Because y'all roll so tight. You know, Fish Baltimore, it really is a family. You know, when you see one, you see the whole squad. So, and that's what we're all about. You know, we're all about coming together. We're all about the unity. So, You know, there's a lot of great organizations out here in Baltimore who are doing the work, and that's what, you know, YBE Radio, that's what we like to promote. That's why we have a lot of people from Baltimore. It may seem that they're all people that I know, but I'm sorry if I know people who just out here doing the work. That's what's important. Like, don't talk about it. You know, you have to be out here in the streets. You have to be out here in the community. That's what matters.
100%. Shout out to all the members of Fix Baltimore. Shout out to all the people that helped us and support us. I want to thank y'all again. You can't never get enough thanks. So it's a lot of names, and that would it'd take up a lot of time. But we want to thank you all.
My thing is we've gotten a lot of support. Me and Keith together had kind of went into this whole thing, you know, just not blind, but off of an idea, and the people that have attached to it and kind of built what it is now, honestly, are some of the most righteous black people in Baltimore that I have had an ability to work with. So I appreciate everybody that stayed righteous with us as we trek out here and try to change our community.
Okay. And since we do have a couple minutes left, what's going on with Neptune's project? I remember there was some fundraising going on. Do you guys have any updates? But no, that's your girl.
Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Neptune, she still has the Black Revolver project going on. She's been, if you're in any spot in Baltimore, you may run into Neptune at this point, but she's about everywhere doing her poetry. She always has her camera with her. Getting footage for her project. So she's, you can call it poetry in motion right now, or production in motion. But she did get her project funded, and she got her equipment. So that's what she's, now she's out here working and doing her work as well. Yeah.
Okay, if
you listen
to Neptune, we're going to get you up here too.
Oh, y'all got to get Neptune.
Yes, please get Neptune.
Like,
yeah, girl, you wait long. We're going to be coming for you. We're going to get you up here too, for real. Because I've seen her around, but I have yet to really, like, connect with her. But her energy is mad strong, where you just see that, you know, you just see the power within her.
One of my theories, not even a theory, it's a proven fact, is that there's going to be a queen to lead us, or a female energy to lead us. And Neptune has that spirit, you know what I mean? So she needs to share that with Baltimore, and she is, and I'm appreciative of that for sure.
Yeah, she was at the Love and Hip Hop show last night, and she dropped this for the first time she did this rap song. It was the first one. Oh my goodness! Like, she's, as an artist, she's so diverse, and every single lane she gets in, she takes over, and it's very powerful and empowering. So yes, if you haven't heard it live, well, you definitely follow, look up on her. The funding, you see that what happened from the funding, created a job where she's pursuing her dream. She's doing exactly what she set out to do. And it's a beautiful thing to see her success and her growth and her continued success. Just definitely check out Neptune. Shout out Neptune the Poet.
Her name is Neptune the Poet, but I call her Neptune the Guy, because
True.
That's dope. Well, is there anything else? Any other events? Any other projects that you guys want to shout out? We got about 6 more minutes.
All right. If you all are looking to do, I would say, art events. I don't promote parties. I'm speaking only to artists, to people who want to do community activation places. To do an event or coordinate an event, I do have an art studio that I rent out, and you can definitely come out, be a part of that. Use this as a platform to reach out to your fans and have use as another media outlet. So you can reach me on Instagram at KC_X2, and you can also reach me on Facebook at KC Fix Baltimore. So it's KC Space Fix Baltimore on Facebook, KC_X2. Anything you got, Maurice?
So Black Dirt Farm just had a late harvest as well. So if you're interested, they haven't got some cabbage, some watermelon radishes, a lot of produce. So if you're interested in looking at some, to buying some Black Farm produce in January, contact blackdirtfarmer@gmail.com. They send you the list of what's available now. Then a few, it's agricultural-wise, it's going to be a lot coming this year. I don't know what all is going to manifest. A lot of things are in development and in talks, and even in pre-talks. And I'm sure that as the year develops, I'll be talking to even more people. So on the agricultural tip, just stay tuned. Just stay tuned with that, because we're going to be doing a lot to promote the Black farms that are in Baltimore, and also create new ones. So just be on the lookout. And my information, you can check me out on Facebook, Maurice Ashby. And Instagram, I don't really see much on Instagram other than family stuff. But that's just Snig MSA, SNIGMSA at Instagram. That's how you get in contact with me.
Okay, and again, YBE is going to be the featured organization for Come Together on Friday. So make sure you come out, catch us out. You know, we're going to be out here in these streets. We would love to meet some of the listeners and just connect with some new people in the community. We're always looking for more guests to have on the show because we want to be able to showcase the positive things that are going on in the DMV. So, yes, definitely come out on Friday. Rare Emma's will be there.
It's going to be lit. Thank you, everybody. We appreciate it. Please come check us out, and we will catch you guys on the next show. Talk to y'all later, and have a good night.
Everyone, good night.
Peace,
Black Power. Black Lives Matter most.
Peace.
Good night, everybody.